Good morning. I am so glad to be here. I love this church. I do. I love this church. I have so many great memories of this church. I grew up in the church. Terry doesn't remember that, even though he and I were here at the same time. He doesn't. He skipped a lot then, I think. But so many really good memories in this church. I remember being baptized right there in this baptistry by Tim Wallingford, who again, he married you, and you still don't remember me.
What? He married my wife and I. I didn't marry Tim.
Really? That's good. I thought his taste was a little better than that. My wife, I met her in this church. So I have a lot of great memories. I remember she tells the story that she remembers walking in that Sunday and seeing me sitting over there, and it was like everybody else just disappeared. Like a light shone down from heaven on me. And like she could hardly contain herself. But we've been married about 18 years now, and they will be here a little later. But like I said, so many great memories. I preached my first sermon ever on this stage. I think I was 14 years old. And the only thing I can tell you today is I promise today will be better than that. I'm not going to tell you it's going to be good, but I'll tell you it'll be better than that because that was like 6 minutes and really fast. But I love this church. It was a church that invested so much time, so much energy, so much money into a young kid who probably should never be on a stage anywhere leading a church or preaching. But you guys invested so much of your time, so much of your money, so much of your energy in making sure that young people could grow up in a relationship with the Lord, and that they would never leave that, and that they would remain faithful and somehow, someday, end up on a stage preaching to people. So I thank you for that. It's amazing. Amen. Yes, you're allowed to talk and have fun in church. I really do. I believe church should be the most exciting, fun place on the planet. Like the most exciting thing that ever took place in the history of the world was this guy died, and 3 days later he came back from the dead. I mean, he rose up from the dead, and that's exciting. And it's taken the church 2,000 years to make it boring. I got a problem with that. Exciting, but also there are things here that are. I remember the last time I stood on this stage, I was preaching the funeral for my grandfather. That was tough, but a lot of memories, but a deep love for the church, and I pray for you as a church often, every week. I pray and just ask God to bless you as a church. And I know 20 years ago when I left, man, the church was full and flourishing and growing. And I understand that there are cycles in church. I've been in ministry for 20 years. I've seen churches grow. I've seen churches decline, and I've seen them go back up. I know there are just times where we've got to refocus. We've got to re-understand what God is doing in our lives as individuals, in our lives as a church. So I pray for that. And today, though, we're going to jump into the Bible. We're going to be in the story in chapter 10. And when Dusty asked me to preach, I was excited about that because actually next week in Illinois, where I'm at, we're going to be doing chapter 10 of the story. So I get to preach this sermon here this week and then go back next week and preach it. And they're going to think, man, this guy worked really hard on this sermon this week. I'm going to have it down. And I'm looking forward to that too. And that's where I've been in Illinois about 5 years now. In December will be 5 years. A little church in a little railroad town of 800 people. It's all the town holds is 800, and we're running about 220 people. And we just enjoy being together and coming together as a church and reaching lost people. We've understood that God's call on our lives as Christians and God's call on our lives as the church is that we reach people who are far from God, and we bring them into a life-changing relationship with Jesus Christ. That's our job. That's our focus. That was the commission that God gave to his church, that God gave to Christians, was, hey, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go introduce people to me. I want you to go bring people to me. So we're going to do some Bible study this morning in chapter 10 of the story, the book of 1 Samuel in the Bible. If you've got your Bible, you can turn to 1 Samuel. We're going to be in chapters 8, 9, 15. We're going to be all over the book of 1 Samuel this morning. And we're going to do some Bible study, and then we're going to do some application stuff. How does this apply to you? How does this apply to me? What area of my life do I need to take my next step in with Jesus Christ? Because that's our mission statement at Ken Mundy Christian Church, is that we exist to lead people to take their next step in a life-changing relationship with Jesus Christ. And whether you've been a Christian for 100 years or 1 week, you've got a next step to take. All of us have a next step to take. We never reach a point where God is not asking us to continue to grow closer to him and to follow him more obediently. So 1 Samuel, we're introduced to this guy named Samuel. And Samuel, he's a prophet of God. Also, many people believe that he was the last of the judges. And he's not listed in the book of Judges, so some people are like, well, maybe he's not a judge, and maybe he's a judge. But anyway, he filled the role of judge, of prophet, for the nation of Israel in the meantime. So he was doing that, and people came to him, and they said, hey, listen, give us a king to lead us. Give us a king to lead us. In 1 Samuel 8, verse 6, it says, this displeased Samuel, so he prayed to the Lord. How oftentimes when we're displeased with something, do we stop and think for just a second, I'm just going to go to God with this. I'm just going to talk to God. Because see, Samuel could have got upset. It said he did. He was displeased. But he could have went on a rampage and said, hey, you know what? You're wrong. Why do you want a king? Why do you want to do that? That's not the way we've done it before. Well, let's not lead that way. But no, what did Samuel do when he was displeased? He went to the Lord. He began to pray and seek the guidance of God. You know, why do they need a king? They didn't need a king. It was foolish. It was a foolish request, and we'll see that all throughout the nation of Israel's history. But we need a king. Well, they don't need a king. What was wrong with the judges? What was wrong with the way that God ordered things? Nothing. If you look back through there, every time there was a judge, and every time they were being obedient to the word of God, they were prospering. They were successful. They were victorious. They had peace for 40, 50 years, 80 years, if you look throughout the history of the judges. But something wasn't right. They wanted a king. Now Samuel, he had a unique upbringing. Very unique. His mother was Hannah. And she was a devout believer. But she had a problem. The problem was she was barren. And in those days, history tells us that if you were barren or if you had some other kind of illness or disease, that you were cursed by God. That's what they thought of people who were barren. They thought they've done something wrong in order to be cursed by God. And we know today that that's not true. There's all kinds of reasons for people to be barren. But back then, every physical problem, every ailment, every illness, it was a direct result of your sin or the sin of your parents. So they thought that for some reason that Hannah had been cursed, and she spent years praying. And her prayer was, God, if you give me a son, I will dedicate him to you. I will dedicate him to you, and he will be yours. Like, isn't that a prayer that every parent should pray? God, I just want to dedicate my child to you. I've been in ministry for 20 years, and I was in youth ministry for 3 and kind of did a combo of ministry and youth ministry together for a lot of years while I ministered in Kentucky. And here's what I've seen. Instead of parents dedicating their children to the Lord, what they do is they dedicate their children to sports or to music or to cheerleading or to something else. And church is just an option. The Lord is just an option. If we don't have anything better to do, we'll take our kids to church. But then an amazing thing happens. Their kid gets to be 14, 15, 16 years old, and they don't want to come to church anymore, and they're beginning to live this lifestyle that the parents don't agree with, and they bring their kid to the church, and they say, hey, preacher, you need to fix my kid. I don't know what's wrong with my kid. And I have to look at those parents and say, I know what's wrong with your kid. You've showed them for 16 years that everything else in the world is more important than church, and everything else in the world is more important than a relationship with Jesus, and now you want to bring them back in. I can't fix your kid. I'm sorry. I'll do everything I can to help. But what you've taught your kid all of their life is that there are things way more important than having a relationship with Jesus. And it can't be fixed overnight. That's one of the reasons I'm so thankful for this church. It was a place that I loved to come. So thankful for my mom, who's back there today, who made it a priority that every single week, your rear end's going to be in church. And to this day, I think I've probably in 38 years missed 12 Sundays of church. That's my best guess. Because it was a priority. Because someone cared enough about me to make sure I was there. And I just think things would be a lot different in our world today, in our country today, if we as the grown people, the adults, would start making church and a relationship with Jesus a number one priority, not only in our lives, but in the lives of our children, and bringing them there. And that's what Hannah did with Samuel. That's why Samuel had this great upbringing, and he was raised by a priest named Eli, which is kind of strange. Like Hannah just brought him to the temple and dropped him off. You can have him. So Eli raised him, and he grew up serving the Lord in the temple, and he then becomes the prominent leader in Israel. In all of the land, he's the prominent Israel. Everybody's coming to him. Samuel, how do we do this? What's God say about this? Samuel, what's our next step? How are we going to be led through this? And in 1 Samuel 8, verse 7, and it says this is Samuel's reply to the request for a king. And the Lord told him, listen to all the people that are saying to you, it's not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. See, Samuel was feeling pretty down. He was pretty disgusted with the way things were going. They want a king. Why aren't the prophets good enough? Why aren't I good enough? And God just tells him, it's not you they're rejecting. It's me they're rejecting as their king. Now, basically, their desire was to be like all the other nations. Now, they looked around and said, hey, I want to be like all the other nations. And I see that in church world a lot. I fight that battle in church world a lot. I look at all the other churches that are doing great things, and they're growing like crazy, and they've got the fancy light shows. I'm like, these lights right here are blinding me, but that's okay. But they've got those things, and I'm not opposed to those things by any means. But when we look at other places, when we look at other cultures, when we look at other churches, when we look at other countries, and we say we want to be like them, that's a problem. Because God has given each of us a very unique calling. God's given each church, I believe, a very unique calling to reach the community that they're in. And when we look at ways to do that, we try to imitate, we try to copy, we try to use the way that other people go, we're going to fail the calling that God's given us. And it's not that we're rejecting the leaders, we're rejecting God as the king, because he has called us to reach the community that we're in. He's called this church to reach this community that's right around you, all over the place, to share the good news of Jesus with people. And you're not going to do it the same way that Whitewater's doing it. You're not going to do it the same way Bright's going to do it. God has given you a unique role, a unique obligation to reach the people that are around. And you just got to figure out what that is. That's the hard part. You've got to figure out how to do that. But that's what he's given you. But as I read this story, I think about what was it that Israel didn't like? What part of God's covenant didn't they like? Did they not like God's protection? Like, he would protect them. He promised them that he would protect them. You go all the way back to Moses. God made that promise with Moses. That when you go into battle, I'll protect you if you're obedient to me. Same thing with Joshua. I'll protect you. All the way through, I will protect you. Did they not like the protection? Maybe it was God's abundance that they didn't like. You know, I'm going to give you this land that's going to be flowing with milk and honey. You're going to have grapes, and you remember the spies, they went in, and the grapes were so big, and the clusters were too big, and all of those things. Maybe they didn't like God's abundance. I don't know. Maybe it was God's inheritance. But I can't think. What was it they didn't like? Well, here's what it is they didn't like, and it's the same thing we don't like today. They didn't like being subject to God's authority. They didn't like authority. We don't like authority. None of us. How many of you? I'm going to ask you to raise your hand because that's what I do. How many of you have ever had a speeding ticket? Hey, a bunch of sinners. No. But yeah, that feeling when the blue lights come on behind you, man, that's never a good feeling. Because you know that you're outside of the authority of the law, and we don't like that. And that's what it was with God. They didn't like God's authority. They didn't like obedience. And we're the same way. Like, we're all kind of rebels at heart. Not that we want to be. It's not like we sit around and think about, man, I just don't want to be under God's authority. But there's something in us that leads us away from God. God tells Samuel this in verse 9. He says, warn them solemnly and let them know what the king who will reign over them will do. So Samuel does that. He said, okay, you want a king? Let me tell you what a king's going to do. A king's going to make you pay taxes. A king's going to take your land. A king's going to take your sons and make them serve in the military. A king's going to take your daughters and make them his slaves. He'll make decisions about what he thinks is best for you. And it's a lengthy thing of all of the bad things a king will do to them. And this is what it says in verse 19. But the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and go out before us and fight our battles. When Samuel heard what all the people said, he repeated before the Lord, and the Lord answered, listen to them and give them a king. I think sometimes we've got to be careful what we ask for. Sometimes we've got to be careful what we ask for because we might get it. The first man to be named king here would have been Saul. In chapter 9, verse 2, Saul was described as being an impressive young man without equal among the Israelites. He was a head taller than any of the others. So he's tall, dark, and handsome. And then in verse 10, I don't know why I keep picking this up. I'm going to take a drink, but I can't quit talking. But in chapter 10, verse 1, it says, then Samuel took a flask of oil, poured it on Saul's head, and kissed him, saying, is not the Lord anointed you leader over this nation, over his inheritance? Now, up to this point, they didn't have any centralized government. If you know the history. They had 12 tribes, and they were kind of scattered out. And they were all autonomous. They led themselves. But they worked together kind of as a community. Each tribe led themselves. But now they're going to be subject to a king. And early on, Saul had some victories. Things looked really good for Saul for a while. They had some trouble up north with the Ammonites. So King Saul sends the word to the tribes, and all of the people come together. They're unified. 36,000 men volunteer and they go up and fight and they defeat the Ammonites. And Saul starts thinking, hey, this king thing's pretty good. I like that. But he quickly becomes convinced that he's the one that's achieving victory. He's the one that's such a great leader. He's the one that's accomplishing everything. And he stops listening to Samuel. And he stops listening to God. And sometimes that happens in our lives. God blesses us, things are going well, and we begin to think that we're a whole lot better than we really are. And then we begin to ignore the word of God. You know, that's the subtle draw that happens, I think, in our lives, is that when God's blessing us and when things are going well, we begin to think we don't need him. It's real easy to need God when things are going bad and things are falling apart. Well, that's the first place we always run. But when things are going good, we tend to forget him. And in 1 Samuel 15, God gives Saul kind of a test of his obedience. He gives him some instruction. It says this in verses 1 through 3. That I am the one the Lord sent to anoint you king over his people Israel. So listen now to the message of the Lord. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel. For when they waylaid them as they came up from Egypt. Now go and attack the Amalekites and totally destroy everything that belongs to them. Do not spare them. Put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys. That sounds harsh, doesn't it? And we think that's way too harsh, but we've got to keep in mind that God cannot tolerate sin. He cannot. And this was God's judgment on the Amalekites for sinning, for coming against his people. God cannot tolerate sin. Jesus, even, in fact, we'll talk about that in the New Testament. He would say that the enemy, he comes only to steal, to kill, and destroy what's going on. He comes in there to steal. What's he going to steal? He's going to steal your joy. He's going to take the joy out of your life. Comes to kill. He's going to kill your relationships. He comes to destroy. And his ultimate goal is to destroy your faith. So God is willing to do whatever it takes to destroy the sin that's in our lives. And that was what he was doing with the Amalekites. He wasn't being harsh. He was saying, look, I've got to destroy sin. I've got to do away with it. He was saying, hey, that people matter. And now Saul, he does most of what the Lord asked him to do. He does most of it. But he keeps some of the livestock for himself. And finally, he erects a mountain or a monument to himself. And that didn't sit well with God. It says this in verse 10. Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel. I am grieved that I've made Saul king because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions. Samuel was troubled and he cried out to the Lord all that night. Early in the morning, Samuel got up and went to meet Saul, but he was told, Saul has gone to Carmel. There he has set up a monument in his own honor and has turned and gone on down to Gilgal. When Samuel reached him, Saul said, the Lord bless you. I have carried out the Lord's instructions. Now, Saul's either lying or he's stupid. I don't know which. Maybe he really thinks he carried out all that God said. Maybe he really believes that. Or he's lying. It's almost comical what Samuel says next. But Samuel said, what then is all this bleating of sheep in my ears? What's this lowing of cattle that I hear? I hear these animals that you kept. You didn't do everything God said. It's like the kid that's, I didn't eat that cake, and he's got chocolate icing all over his face. Saul destroyed everything that he thought, except for what he thought was good. He thought he had a better plan than God had. See, we do that sometimes. We think we have a better plan than that God has. King Saul thought that he could take something good and make it out of what God had already declared bad. And before we start pointing fingers at him, like you and I, we do the same thing. We look at something that God's declared bad, and we think, well, we can get something good out of that. We try to make it seem okay. We justify the sin in our own lives, thinking, well, it's really not that bad. We can talk about some specifics in a minute, but But we treat the word obey, you know, like it's a bad word. Like I've been asked when I'm doing weddings, don't say that part about obeying. And I'm like, I don't. I say submit. But but we don't like obey. We don't celebrate obedience. You know, I remember 16 years ago, my life changed. Changed completely. I began to care about some things that I never really cared about before. And those were Disney princesses. You know, and what happened was I had a baby girl. And so I'd start spending time with my baby girl, and as she began to like to watch television, we had to watch Disney princesses. And we had to watch them a lot. And I began to care about Disney princesses. Like, I got to know all their names. I got to know how they dressed. I got to know all of the songs that they sang. Why? Because I got into a relationship with someone that I really cared about, and it changed the way I thought. Now see, 17 years ago, if I'd have called up my friends and said, hey, let's get together and watch some Disney princesses tonight. That wouldn't have went too well, would it? But when you get in a relationship with someone, you begin to care about the things they care about. And it's the same with us in Jesus. When we really get into a relationship with him, we begin to care about the things that he cares about. It changes our thoughts. It changes our actions. It changes our level of obedience, because now we're in a relationship with someone that really matters. And listen, obedience matters to Jesus. Samuel asked Saul a question. He said, Saul, what do you think pleases the Lord more? Burnt offerings and sacrifices, or your obedience? I'll tell you what delights the Lord, and it's to obey is better than sacrifice. To heed is better than the fat of rams. We need to learn that a heart of obedience is better than giving lip service to God, putting a token of sacrifice in the offering plate. God is asking us for obedience. Same thing he was asking to Saul. God wants our obedience. And our disobedience is essentially a pride issue. It's a power struggle against God. We just hate the fact that somebody's over us. We hate the fact that somebody tells us what to do. We only want to listen to our own voice. We want to walk to the beat of our own drum, do our own thing, quench our own thirst. It's almost as if we have an allergic reaction to obedience or something. But I'm telling you, when you come into a relationship with Jesus, things begin to change. You know, James 4:6 says, God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And because of Saul's pride, he disobeyed God. Because of our pride, we disobey God. In verse 23, Samuel tells Saul, because you have rejected the way of the Lord, he has rejected you as king. See, our disobedience really does matter. Saul's disobedience really did matter. Here's an important principle that we need to understand, is that not all God's judgments are immediate. And we should never think that God's not interested or not involved in our lives because when we sin, we're not punished right away. Sometimes we do something and we're like, oh, there were no effects to that. There was no consequences to that. So I'll continue to do it, and I'll continue to do it. And when nothing happens, we're thinking, well, maybe that wasn't so bad after all. And we start to push the boundary further and further away, thinking, well, it must be okay. And then eventually we become numb to sin. That's what's happened with our country over the last 40, 50, 60 years. Is that God hasn't judged us yet, so we've become numb to sin. That's why we have the issues with abortion that we have. And there's so many of them going on. And people are saying, hey, it's a woman's right to choose that. We've just become numb to sin. Same-sex relationships and marriages, same thing. We've just become numb to sin. And I'm not the politically correct preacher. I'll stand up here and tell you that it's sinful. But as a country and as a nation and as people, we've become numb to it. Not all of God's judgments are immediate, but all of God's judgments take place. Eventually, Saul begins to lose all of his peace. He begins to lose all of his joy. He becomes tormented. And it's an epic story of one who stood tall, but then he fell hard. Here's some lessons that we can learn from this morning. And one, selective obedience is disobedience. Selective obedience is disobedience. God doesn't give us a smorgasbord and say, you pick and choose what you want to obey. He doesn't. But so often, that's what we want to do. Well, God, I don't like that rule. I don't like that law. I don't like that mission. I don't like that purpose. I don't like that direction. So I'm just going to choose my own. I like all these others, but this one over here, I'm going to ignore. If you're being selective in how you're obeying God, you're being disobedient to the whole measure of the law. Second thing, learn, partial obedience is disobedience. Partial obedience is disobedience. You know, David would write in Psalm 119:4 and also in verse 44, it says, you have laid down the precepts that are to be fully obeyed. Fully obeyed. It says, I will always obey your law forever and ever. Like, we try to get by partial truth-telling. And I always tell people, a little lie is like a little pregnancy. Eventually, everybody finds out. But I talk about this a lot, partial obedience, because we want to be partially obedient to God. One of the issues I talk about is tithing. I think tithing is a biblical principle all the way from the very beginning of the Old Testament all the way to now. So, well, it's not found in the New Testament. We could talk about that, and I can show you at least five verses that I think are really referring to tithing because God instituted it before the law took place. But people are like, we're partially obedient with that. I'll throw in 5%. I'll give 2%. I'll give whatever. I just believe that's partially obedient. We do that with forgiveness. And we've got somebody that we know God's calling us to forgive. And our answer to that is, well, I'll treat them nice, but I'm going to hold on to that grudge in the inside, and I'm not going to let it go. Partial obedience. But partial obedience, listen, is always disobedience. I have to ask people all the time, what's your next step in that area? What area are you being partially obedient in? The third one this morning is delayed obedience is disobedience. This simple parent logic in this one. You tell your kid to clean the room by the end of the day, but it doesn't get done. I'm going to say, oh, I'll do it in the morning. Well, they're going to clean it, but it's delayed obedience. And delayed obedience is still disobedience. Here's what that means. If God is telling you to do something, if God is speaking to you, then he means for you to do it. If God commands us to forgive others as he's forgiven us, that means he wants us to forgive others right now. If God commands us to live generously, that means he's telling us to live generously right now. If God's asking us to share Christ with someone that we work with, someone that we have a relationship, he's not saying wait to do it tomorrow. He's saying do it now. Delayed obedience is disobedience, and there's so many people that will hear God speak to them in a church service, that will feel that thing in their heart that says, hey, I know I need to do this, but you leave and you go to lunch and you forget about it. And I always challenge people, if God's speaking to you, step out right now and go make that phone call that you need to make and say, hey, I'm sorry. Because delayed obedience is disobedience. And disobedience with God never goes well. God commands us to flee from sexual immorality. It means flee from sexual immorality. God commands us not to worry. He's asking us to lay it on him and give it to him. What's your next step in that issue? God would eventually, through this error of the kings, Saul, the error of the people, begging for a king when God told him you don't really want a king, God would eventually bring about the salvation of all of us through the line of David, who was the next king. But it was all about obedience. Jesus was obedient in everything that God asked him to do. Oftentimes, Jesus would say things like, it's not about my will, it's about God, what you want. You remember when he prayed in the garden? He said, God, please take this cup from me. I don't want to go to the cross. I don't really want to die. But if that's what you will, God, I'll do it. I'll be obedient to you. What is God impressing on your heart this morning that you need to be obedient in? What's the next step that you need to take? Maybe it is to get involved in the servant of ministry and to just step up and take that next step. Perhaps God's calling you to swallow your pride and totally surrender your life to him. Like to give it all up to him. Like maybe you've been trying on your own for years to get this right, but you've never really surrendered your life to Christ. About 2 years ago, I had an 80-year-old who had been coming to church all their life. And he came to me and said, Josh, he said, I don't know that I'm a Christian. And I said, well, what do you mean? I've never fully surrendered to Christ. He said, I got baptized, I've been in the church, but I've never fully surrendered to Christ. He said, I know I need to do that. But he said, I'm afraid, what will everybody think? Everybody thinks I'm a Christian. What will my wife think, who's lived with me and thinks I'm a Christian, but I've never surrendered? Like, she's going to be surprised. And then I just told him, like, she'll either be surprised now or she'll be surprised one day in heaven. Because it's not our good works. It's not our good attitude. It is whether or not we've surrendered our life to Jesus Christ or not that gets us to heaven. So maybe today you need to be obedient in that area. And I know a lot of people and even a lot of churches who preach, they just come forward and say a prayer. Well, that's partial obedience. You've got to be immersed in baptism. And some people put that off and say, well, I don't know. The Bible says immersion. It says be baptized. So maybe today you just need to surrender yourself to the will of God and do that. Maybe it's just forgive somebody today. I don't know. But I think sometimes when God gets statements, when he hears us talking and he hears us thinking, what is it about my covenant they don't like? Why don't they want me to be their king? Why don't they want me to lead? And really, we have two options in life. We can obey or we can disobey. And it never goes well for those who disobey Christ. I'm going to ask you to stand this morning. I'm going to ask the worship people to come up, and they're going to lead us in a song, I Surrender All. And this morning, if you need to make a decision of any type, if you need to just maybe somebody to pray with you or to pray for you, we would love to do that for you this morning. I mean, just come forward as we stand and sing.